Manipulate with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hi, I'm Sabine. Welcome to the 73rd episode of Robots. In today's show, we'll be talking about futuristic manipulators that look nothing like the typical industrial robot arms you've seen in factories. They're bio-inspired and soft. Our first guest, Henry Schieger from the University of Chicago, tells us how he uses jamming technology, or a balloon full of coffee grains, to create a soft universal gripper. Our second guest, André Greschak from the Fraunhofer Institute of Manufacturing Engineering and Automation, IPA, will be telling us about the prize-winning bio-inspired manipulator he created with Festo. But first, as always, let's listen to the latest news in robotics from Christine.
Thanks, Sabine. U.S. company Boston Dynamics, which you may remember for their big dog and pet man robots, has received two new grants by the U.S. Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, through the Maximum Mobility and Manipulation, or M3, program. The first project is called Cheetah, and aims at developing a four-legged cat-like robot with an articulated neck and head, as well as a flexible spine. Cheetah will be capable of fast accelerations and be able to move much faster than current legged robots. The second project, codenamed Atlas, aims at developing a humanoid mimicking human movement. Similar to the cat-like cheetah robot, the focus will be on agility. However, its human shape will cover different methods, such as sidestepping to avoid obstacles and using its arms to assist its balance and movement over rough terrain. In other news, Hiroshi Ishiguro, who you may remember from his interview with the Robots podcast or our previous news reports, has built another ultra-realistic humanoid. A video of his latest creation, which looks exactly like Associate Professor Henrik Scharfe of Aalborg University in Denmark, shows a face that looks so human that it has many viewers wonder if they are really looking at a robot. IEEE Automaton's Evan Ackerman writes, "Okay, I admit it. I found myself wondering whether this was in fact a real robot, or actually a person pretending to be a robot, or even a fake robot." Have a look at the video yourself, and while you're at it, read up on some other Robots Podcast news at www.robotspodcast.com.
Thanks, Christine. Heinrich Schieger is professor at the University of Chicago, where he studies physics. He's part of an interdisciplinary team with chemists, roboticists, and the company iRobot. The team is striving to create a fully soft robot. Along the way, they discovered a universal gripper that looks like a soft balloon rather than a pair of fingers. He'll be giving us his insights on robotics from a physicist's perspective. Hi, Heinrich. Welcome to Robots.
Hi.
Can you please present yourself to our listeners?
So I'm Heinrich Jaeger. I'm a professor of physics at the University of Chicago.
Can you tell us a bit about the Jaeger Group? What are your research interests and motivations?
Yeah, so basically, in our group, we are working on particle science and technology. One specific aspect is that we're looking at essentially how you can make 1 plus 1 come out to be 3. So we're looking at things that have the label of emergence. So what happens when you put many identical particles together and you get behavior that you couldn't associate with any individual one? And one of those that we're specifically interested in is the phenomenon of jamming.
So you actually applied jamming to this really cool universal gripper that was published in PNAS. First of all, what can this gripper do?
Yeah, so this gripper can do something that you could do with your hand, of course, but then it can also do a few things that would be very hard to do with an industrial gripper that is trying to emulate a human's hand. So we are not saying that we could do necessarily things that your hand never could do, but we can do a few things better that industrial grippers would have a hard time with.
What does it look like?
Well, this is the thing. It looks completely different from your normal hand. It is essentially just a blob, a sac or elastic membrane, a balloon filled with material, little particles, the size of sugar or sand grains. And it can change from a very soft, malleable state to a rock-hard state, and that's the principle for this gripper.
So this works using jamming technology. Can you tell us more about how that actually works?
Yeah, so jamming is something that we all know, of course, from our daily experience. So it's really the following. You have a situation, individual particles, it could be sugar grains, sand, it could be cars on a freeway that can flow. So traffic can flow, but traffic can also get stuck. And sand grains, for example, inside a vacuum-packed coffee that you buy in a supermarket, such a pack, when it's evacuated, is really rock hard. But you clip open a corner and you can tilt this pack and the coffee flows out. So you know it goes from a solid-like state to a flowing, almost liquid-like state. And so this is the principle for this jamming gripper. You bring a balloon, fill it with the material in its malleable state, and press it against an object of arbitrary shape. It conforms to that object's surface. It flows into the nooks and crannies and around protrusions, and then you harden it, in our case, by simply pulling a vacuum, just like with that coffee you buy in a supermarket. And now you made a mold, essentially, that fits quite nicely around the object's surface, and at this point, you can then pick up the object because this mold is hard.
What are some of the crazy objects you've picked up with this?
Yeah, you see, the fun thing is that the crazier the object, essentially, the easier it gets for this gripper, which is so different from the usual hand where you have to have this feedback between your eyes and then the sensors on your skin or the sensors embedded in a robotic hand that would have to calculate and figure out how wide to open your hand to, first of all, reach around something, maybe reach into a handle of a coffee cup, and then how hard to press it so that you don't crush the object. And in our case, all of this calculation, if you want, and this processing is done by the material itself, which automatically conforms and flows and then hardens. And so we can pick up objects that are of a really wide variety, and this is the cool thing. You don't have to reprogram this gripper. You can pick up things that are hard, like pieces of metal, coins, springs, and then without doing anything, go over and pick up a uncooked raw egg without crushing it, right? Or a glass or a pen and start writing with that pen or drawing.
I must say, I really love this gripper. I also read that you can pick up multiple objects at one time.
Yeah, so this is the other thing. This method allows to essentially flow around any combination of objects as long as the gripper itself is larger than the set of objects you're picking up. So you could have an egg next to a metal screw, and it would come down onto the two of them and flow around them and pick them up. And it will not change the relative orientation of these objects and then could place them again. Now, one thing I should say, actually, that if you wanted to have if you knew the object beforehand, then you can optimize the gripper, of course, and this is not the sort of thing that we are essentially competing against. We are mostly interested in situations where you don't know a priori the type of object you're picking up. You don't know its shape and its material properties, whether it's soft or hard, and you don't know if you maybe have to rotate it later or just lift it up. And in those situations, these could be emergency situations, let's say, where you have only a limited knowledge or you have limited field of view and not really access to the full information. That's when this type of gripper can perform. And that's why we call it universal, because you don't need to know what kinds of objects to apply it to beforehand.
In the paper, you mentioned three gripping mechanisms: friction, suction, and interlocking. When and how do these mechanisms occur?
Yeah, so this is a part of the underlying physics. So it turns out that the reason why this gripper can pick up this wide range of objects is that there are three different mechanisms that are all working in principle, in combination. So depending on the object, could be one, two, or all three of these mechanisms that work. So one is the one I mentioned, that the gripper in its malleable state essentially flows around the protrusions that an object may have, flow into a hole, let's say. And that's what we call the interlocking mechanism. In addition, of course, the moment you harden the material inside the gripper, you jam the material, it also undergoes a very slight, less than 1% volume contraction. By the way, this is actually really interesting. If you had this gripper go around your hand, it will not squeeze it hard because it's only a fraction of a percent, actually. But this slight decrease in volume means that the gripper presses itself a little bit against the object, and therefore you get also a friction mechanism, just because the surface of the gripper, let's say an elastic rubber membrane, has some friction with the object. So that's the second mechanism that works really well, especially for objects that are hard to pick up because they otherwise may be just smooth. There are no protrusions, let's say a sphere. And thirdly, if the object is not porous, then this friction also goes in concert with a suction mechanism. You essentially use the gripper as if you had a suction cup, you know, like in a bathroom, you know, where you want to put a hook on a bathroom wall around your tub, let's say. And so suction, friction, and interlocking can all work in concert, and that's what makes this gripper very flexible and helps make it universal, as we say.
Can you only pick up the objects?
Well, as it turns out, our collaborators at Cornell just recently showed that, in fact, you can throw. So this is really nice and new because you don't need the elbow action, the leverage of an arm, really. So it's just that flexible bag, if you want. You can turn it from the jammed state, not just in a malleable, but also in a springy state, and, in fact, push the object out. So we can throw.
Does the throwing come from the balloon, or does it come from injecting air back in?
That comes from injecting the air back in this particular way.
So we've seen in a previous episode the Jambot, and now there's this universal gripper. Do you have any other ideas of how jamming technology could be used for applications?
Yeah, so we are just getting started. It was actually a very nice process of having this idea of jamming, which I have to tell you, is started as a academic, science-driven idea, you know, to look at how can you change the state of matter, in this case of particulate matter, from solid to liquid and back and forth. So that's what jamming is. But there weren't really any designed applications out there, and so we were scratching our heads, if you want, and said, well, you know, how can we apply that? And one first application was to apply it to the locomotion of a robot. So this is a blob, essentially, a Jambot that can roll around because it can change its shape and lock the shape into a rigid configuration and then unlock it again and change its shape by jamming and unjamming. And that led us then to consider applying it to a gripping mechanism like we just discussed, right, in this jamming gripper. But basically, what it allows us now to dream about are shape-changing materials, you know, that are based on particulates, matter, so little particles inside some enclosure that can conform to and adapt to various shapes and then be locked in place. And when you're done with that, you can essentially unlock them and reuse them and put them into some other shape.
How important is the material inside? Can this work with any type of grain?
Yeah, this is a great question. So in principle, yes, it could work with any type of grain. However, if you wanted to optimize the jamming action, it's pretty clear that it would pay a lot to think about what kinds of particles may be good or you know, specifically useful for that. And so that's what we're doing right now. In fact, there are types of materials, classes of shapes that work better than others. And this is, again, a beautiful science project. These are deep questions about how particles interlock and touch and how many contacts they have with their neighbors and how you can optimize that.
How do you study this? Is this in simulation or is it really a hard science?
Well, this is a beautiful combination of deep ideas in mathematics, physics, and engineering. So it goes back to one of the oldest standing problems in mathematics, which is, what is the densest packing of identical objects, let's say spheres? This problem goes back to 1611. Johannes Kepler actually started it. And it was solved 400 years later. Believe it or not, you know, it took 400 years for the mathematicians to actually prove that it's the usual greengrocer stacking of apples that is indeed the densest packing. But that's for an ordered arrangement, you know, a crystalline packing. And what we are now asking is that the follow-up question, and I hope it doesn't take 400 years to resolve, if you had a random packing of particles, what is the densest packing? And in fact, we're asking in our project an even more complex and more intriguing question, which is, what is not necessarily the densest packing, what is the strongest packing, you know, when it's jammed? And there's really no fundamental answer to that right now that is known. So it's a really deep question, especially if you then also ask, well, if I don't use spheres but other types of objects, you know, what would the answer be then? All of this is absolutely not known currently, but is at the, you know, foundation, is sort of the underlying science reason for why jamming works so well.
That's really fascinating. One thing I was wondering is, the control you have on this is basically the suction right now to take the air out. How precise is that? How much can you play with this control?
Yeah, so another great question. We are basically right now, what we have done is presented a prototype. And it is important to remember that the scientific underpinning is a jamming transition where particles get close enough to each other that they basically prevent neighbors from moving around them. So you imagine you're in a room and you shove more and more people into it, and eventually you just don't have enough room because you all touch each other with the elbows. You get stuck, like on a freeway, right? So it's a geometrical effect. And in our particular case, we induced this jamming by essentially moving the walls of the room closer to the people, right? Now, there are many other ways of inducing jamming. For example, one can dream about doing that with electrical or magnetic fields, right? So you just flip a switch instead of pulling a vacuum. And we are working on that, and we have some prototypes based on that also. But it doesn't really matter how you induce the jamming transition, and it doesn't really matter how much you jam a system, because as long as the particles are sufficiently hard, the moment they can't move past each other, they're essentially locked. And the best thing about jamming, and you know that from trying to move out of a door with a lot of your colleagues, or from, you know, getting away from a traffic jam, the harder you push, the more you jam. So it's almost a positive feedback, and the system jams harder the harder you push. There are many ways of inducing it. It is not even necessary to control it all that well. And the best thing is, for the purpose of a gripper, you don't need a lot of feedback because the material does it all by itself.
So something very interesting is this goes towards the idea of soft robotics. Do you think this is the future of robotics? Should we be moving away from the typical bolts and screws?
Well, I have to, first of all, put a disclaimer out here. I'm not a roboticist, and I've only recently gotten into that. So I'm a physicist, and we're working on jamming in general, but we got into this through this application, through a wonderful collaboration with engineers, both in academia and also in industry. And so I can't really tell you if this is the future of robotics, but the goal that we set ourselves was to imagine a fully soft robot. And so it was immediately clear that such a robot could not have gears and hinges and, you know, the usual hardware inside. And so pretty quickly then that led us to imagine a particulate-based system like we're just talking about right now. So that this was kind of natural for us to think that way. Of course, we're hoping that the community gets excited about it, because this now opens up a whole bunch of possibilities for all sorts of different systems, joints or whatever else you want to think about that can be then locked in place and unlocked again, but that are not based on the usual gear type approaches.
You mentioned that you've been working in a highly cross-disciplinary team with, well, you're a physicist, there's also chemists, roboticists in the industry. How are you finding such collaborations?
Yeah, well, So originally we were part of a team that involved indeed the whole range of disciplines that you just mentioned. And so we were part of a DARPA-funded research team. So DARPA is the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency here in the United States. And if you want to think out of the box, it's really important to bring in people from different disciplines. That's something that I very much believe in and that we have done here in my institute, you know, for many years already. But what is particularly nice, or has been particularly nice for me this time around, was to get involved so much with engineers, both mechanical engineers and also, you know, a real robotics company. And that really opened my eyes to what's possible in that field and also what's maybe needed in that field. So that has been really a wonderful cross-disciplinary experience.
Can you tell us some of the people you're working with?
Yes, so we worked with a group at Cornell. That's the group of Professor Hart Lipson in mechanical aerospace engineering at Cornell and his graduate student, John Amond. And then we had another collaboration, or part of this collaboration with another team member, that's iRobot Corporation outside of Boston. And there we worked with engineers in that outfit. And in addition, because particle technology is important, we worked with a group that specializes in chemistry aspects of this, and that's the group of Joe DeSimone at the University of North Carolina.
Final question. What do you want to do for the as future steps? What are your future plans?
Oh, so as I said, we're just basically starting with this. We'd love to expand it. So we'd love to induce jamming in different ways besides applying vacuum. Like I said, we're working on this with electrical or maybe magnetic means. We like to look into structures that could be either much, much smaller. So in principle, this whole jamming technology should be scalable. There's nothing in principle that would say it couldn't be. And so we could make it either much, much smaller or much, much larger. I mean, eventually gravity will probably kick in, but just imagine, you know, jamming-based systems that could pick up cars or houses even, right? So those are directions that we are currently dreaming about.
Thanks, Heinrich, for being here with us on Robots.
Thank you, Sabine.
André Greschak won the German Future Prize 2010 along with Festo for his bio-inspired manipulator that looks like an elephant trunk and grips using a mechanism inspired from the tail fin of fish. The robot is made of plastic instead of the usual bolts and screws, is lightweight, and thus safe for human interactions. Hi, André. Welcome to Robots.
Hi there.
Can you please present yourself to our listeners?
My name is André Greschak. I work for the Fraunhofer Institute in Stuttgart, and I lead here a research group working with additive manufacturing and digital printing technology. And additionally, I am a manager of the Fraunhofer Alliance Additive Manufacturing.
You won the German Future Prize 2010 along with Festo for your very impressive handling assistant. First of all, what's a handling assistant?
Yeah, the handling assistant is a kind of robot, but we try to make a new paradigm here in field of robotics, and our goal was breaking new ground in a human technology cooperation, and we wanted to provide a safe assistance system for the industry and for the home application. For example, like ambient assisted living.
So what kind of tasks do you see this robot doing?
The robot should assist the human, and we have a lot of application that we can provide with our robots. We help to the human in field of in a cleaning cart, rich areas in the food industry, picking and sorting, and assisting in during the assembly processes.
So that's currently done with very mechanical arms, I mean the typical industrial robots. What's wrong with those systems?
until now, the conventional factory robot were very separated from humans, and the humans are separated from the robot. So the safe and direct contact can be not realized. So there are doors between the robots and between the humans. And the current existing robot do not offer the potential for expanding human possibilities in different various areas of life. And with our system, we wanted to change it, this human technology cooperation, and provide a very human-like system.
Can you describe what your robot looks like?
Yeah, we were inspired by the elephant trunks, and why elephant trunk is the question. The elephant trunk provides a very interesting model for technology. It is very flexible and transmits very large forces and have a very precise gripping tool. The trunk of elephant has more than 40,000 bundles of muscles, and it makes this very highly flexible and compliant. And this was our goal in this, our research work, was to take this example for the nature and transfer it to the mechanical solution.
That's kind of cool. How do you actually make this work?
Yeah, we have here a very complex work of different technologies. So we have here mechatronics, we have pneumatics, we have such called additive technologies, so-called 3D printing. And only with this working all these technologies, we could realize new actuators, new movement system that are based on very lightweight design. And in this field, we develop a novel actuator, so-called Faltenbug, that we could move, that we could realize this movement of this elephant trunk with new possibilities of this axis.
Does it actually look like an elephant trunk?
Yeah, I would say yes. And you, if you look at it, it makes the same movement like an elephant trunk. We are very flexible in the movement directions, and the new possibilities that we can scale our robot, our elephant trunk, just only by a small cut design changes.
You were talking about pneumatics. How does that fit in the picture?
The pneumatic, yes. Our robot is a very lightweight structure. So it is plastic. It's normal metal, and inside the robot we have only air, and the pneumatic is used to realize the good movement of our telephone trunk, and our assistant consists of three basic elements, and additionally of a hand axis and a gripper with adaptive fingers, and all the movement that the basic element do will be regulated by pressure air that could be passed into the chambers of the bionic handling assistant.
Is it difficult to control?
I would say no, because we develop a special multi-axis controller at Faster, and it is also the system brain of the system. And we have some industrial motion control solutions, and we can control this pressure by piezo valves. And we would like to introduce also the vision, some special vision system that we know how to move the system.
You mentioned the adaptive fingers. I really like this fin gripper technology. Can you tell us how it works?
Yes, this adaptive gripper of our bionic system is so-called fin gripper, and it is based on the structure of a fish fin. And it is a very impressive structure, very flexible and very compliant. And with our fin grippers, we can hold and move very delicate objects with varying contours. And this fin gripper is very light because it's made not of metal but of plastic with this additive technologies. And to this, our fin gripper adapt to the object that we would like to have to grip, and so we cannot and we can grip very very light product like an apple, some other slide structure, and without destroying it.
What you call additive technology, is that basically 3D printing?
Yes. Yes, it is interesting that this, our robot is made by this 3D printing technologies, and there are many advantages of this approach. We use so-called selective laser sintering technology for it, and with this technology we can realize very lightweight design, cut design, and we have also a very cost-efficient production. And only this complex geometry of our robot and this complex movement that we realize by our air pressure chambers can be also manufactured by these additive technologies. But there is no other technology, manufacturing technology, that can realize this complex structure.
Is it because there's holes inside?
Exactly. It's one part of it, that we can print the whole complex structure included our actuators as a one part, and also the holes inside can be realized in one manufacturing process step.
So something I really love about this robot is that it's very flexible, very compliant. Do you think that's the future of robotics as opposed to the typical bolts and screws approach?
Yeah, it is a new approach in this field, and I believe, both of these robots, of these metal robots and the plastic robot, will have a lot of applications in the future. But thinking of this human machine cooperation, I think that we started here a new thinking process and working with this lightweight structure, and we provide here the robot that are more adapted for the nature and is much more closer to the human than before. And I think especially for this assistance application, we started with the first step in this, and I think this is very wide field of application from such a compliant and nice plastic robots.
I was wondering, how did the collaboration with Festo work?
Yeah, it was a very good cooperation because we had a very good defined roles of the everyone team, and we have a good experience exchange. And it was important here that there was cooperation between applied research institutes at the company. So we provide some new solutions to the development, and we are sure that our partner, our industrial partner, will continue with this work, and we were sure that the robot will come to the market. During the work, there was also exchange with other research organizations, and I think it's a big teamwork during the development phase.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, this idea that what you're doing will be used in reality.
Yeah, there are some activities that we have to continue with the robot. I think we have to give our robot more intelligence here for the future. Festo have a lot of new various application, and it's very amazing how many new ideas come to us from the customers. And listening to the customers' wishes and requirements, I think the important step is to give our robot more flexibility in seeing and listening to the orders. And you can imagine that we have a lot of possible moving parts in order to reach our goal. And we believe that the robot have to decide by themselves which one is the right one and how can he move to the goal with the flexibility that he has. And we work also on scaling and precision of the robot because we have this possibility due to additive manufacturing, and we have to use it.
Does this robot actually have sensors yet?
Yes, we have a very, very simple sensor now because this is just only prototype, but we work on we know where is our robot, we know how to grip, where to grip, but how already said, we would like to give more intelligence to it, and the robot got some modern vision systems now, and I think we will in next 1-2 years give more sensors to the robot than before.
Sort of final question, what do you see as the main challenges in industrial robots in general for the future?
The robots were used in a field of in a manufacturing environment now, and I think it's a time now in Europe that we change our meaning of the robots. So you know more a system come that work that will work as a with a service application with the home application, and I think it's a little bit paradigm of a change in the future, not only if this technical question, but also in our mind, that we have to think of it working together with robots, have more robots in our environment, and I think this is very important for the engineers as well for the users to get closer and to really exchange the possibilities and the wishes, how could it work, such a robot or a new robot application in the home environment.
Thanks, Andre, for being here with us on Robots.
Thank you very much.
That's it for today's episode of Robots. For more information on our guests, have a look at our website at www.robotspodcast.com. Thanks for listening. Hope to see you in 2 weeks. Manipulate with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.